Hi, and welcome to season three of the Intersections on the Spectrum podcast. The Intersections on the Spectrum podcast is the brainchild and passion project of Doug Bletcher and Kelly Braun Johnson, created to discuss intersectional issues within the autistic community and give visibility to commonly marginalized, repressed, underrepresented, or erased identities and issues. We aim to introduce you to the people and stories you didn't know about, but needed to hear, and hope that by seeing yourself represented in the community allows you to feel seen. Wanted to also, as we're starting this third season of the podcast, we are looking for sponsors to help us keep this going. As you know, it's a passion project between Doug and I, and we've been putting our time and our money into it. And if you'd like to support us, we'll come up with a subscription model or a sponsorship model that can help us keep this going.
Well, I am so excited for season three. I'm so excited to always see you, Kelly, and learn from you in each of these seasons. And I can't wait to learn during these conversations. And I'm also really excited to, I couldn't think of a better guest to start season three. Kayla Smith is joining us. Thanks so much, Kayla.
I am happy to be here.
So in each of these episodes, we always start off with the same question, wanting to learn about people's identities. So what would you say are the identities that you feel connected with?
I identify as a Black autistic queer woman. I tend to be more focused on, you know, being linked more toward being Black and autistic. And I'm still kind of new to being queer. And I came out in 2021, a day after a Bi Visibility Day. So I'm still learning about my queerness. So I'm more in tune being Black and autistic majority of the time.
I think it's always wonderful that we can also embrace new identities as the terminology comes to us, as the experiences come to us. I think it's really important that when we talk about intersectionality, that we're not trying to put one on top of the other or anything. We are all of these things all the time, but we get to, I guess, share more about whichever identity we're more comfortable with at any time too. So jumping right in 2015, you connected with the community of autistic people on Twitter to start to embrace your autism and unlearn your internalized ableism. What are some of the ableist things that you have unlearned in order to improve the quality of your life?
Two, I need to stop being hard on myself. Three, I got limits and I should never overcome my disability because it's part of who I am and how it affects me in everyday life. So that's what I had to really unlearn, not to be hard on myself. Definitely the number one thing, and doubting as well, because I try to be overcome my disability. And just that the one thing is stop being hard on myself, that and be perfectionist all the time. That I had to learn the hard way.
I'm still trying to learn that. I find it's very hard. But the same thing for me, my diagnosis, I stopped feeling broken and wrong or bad or guilty. I think that's really freeing and helps build a positive self-identity for sure.
Kayla, you were mentioning about your limits, and that's something I'm really trying to focus in on my life now, is honoring my limitations. Like, how have you gone about, like, figuring those things out?
I'll be honest, I don't even know, because I've been trying to, like, unlearn my internalized ableism, so that I did got the mortality to prove people wrong kind of vibe, and trying to overdo myself at the same time. And I'm still trying to learn my limit and best way to accommodate myself. If I get overwhelmed and things like that, it's just hard to pinpoint like when I'm going to be burning out. So I'm still trying to figure out what my burnout be. But I mean, like, you know, someone asked me, like, are you able to be yourself? I like, no, because I'll be in survival mode.
Now, in 2018, you began to advocate around your autism and eventually focused your advocacy work intersectionality within autism and created the hashtag Black Autistic Pride to celebrate being Black and Autistic. What are some of the things within the intersection of being Black and Autistic that you wish would be celebrated a lot more?
Acting too white or acting too Black to be Autistic. And just basically for a long time, like, I have been called, rude, just mean, just, guess, being a Black woman, you always think, quote, angry, which I'm not angry. I just very straightforward. You ask me, I go tell you the truth one way or the other. But sometimes, or the fact that I act too white, because growing up, I had to go speak therapy growing up. That's why I had to pronunciate different vowel and consonant at the same. And also, like, being Black autistic, that's a really good question, which I think need to know more about, is that, like, as I learn about intersectionality, like, masking is different to Black and brown people and then though white autistic peers. Because even though that we are autistic, but our reality is very different. And that why autism is a spectrum for a reason, because not ever going to experience the same thing. And just understanding that we are different and value each other instead of just looking at one specific autism that represents everybody, and not everybody represented the same way, or we're not Rain Man.
Yeah, that is super important. I think that what has been forgotten, or not, maybe not even forgotten, just ignored in research, as well as not looking at the cultural differences. And it's not just the Black community that's been ignored, it's the Southeast Asian community, the way that they embrace autism. Also the Asian Pacific community, completely different. And so we need that understanding in order to better understand autism, because not every culture sees autism as a stigmatized thing that needs curing either. I think it's really important that we start doing more research and more, and not always just research. It could be ethnocultural understanding of the differences and how we perceive disability and how we deal with it in communities. And we wanted to go back a bit to the intersectionality we were talking about at the beginning. And of course, it's the title of our podcast. But, you know, it's not just a buzzword for us. It's not something new. It didn't just start yesterday, right? It was actually created by Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989. But what are some things that you would suggest that people could learn more about the history and that intersectionality of Black and disabled folks?
There is one book called Black Disability Politics by Sammy Shook. I don't want to pronounce her last name wrong. Her name's Sammy. And she's a professor at, I think it, Wisconsin, I can't remember what it is, but I know she wrote a book called Black Disability Politics. And she talked about, you know, these are how, like, a Black Panther, Black women helped them back in the 1970s and 80s, and how they used disability politics. And I thought it was very interesting to learn about just Black disability history behind it, how it came about, and also following Black disabled creator on social media and playing like Imani, Bridian, a lot of people who are actresses, different range of experiences, like Tim from TikTok, and learn about Black and brown autistic people, how we look at the world, and learn about different perspective and what it like to be us and pay us. And cut into racism and stuff.
yes, pay us.
Now, Kayla, in the last month or so, I've been very excited to see that you've started a video series, which is titled The Life of a Black Autistic Queer Woman. And in one of the episodes, you discussed your experience in special education in elementary school and looked back at a picture from that time. And it sounded like there was not a lot of intersectionality in your class, as you were the only girl and you were the only other Black student. So I'm curious, what type of impact do you think that has on students when intersectionality may not be thought of at all?
Look back at that picture, like, I think I got that picture either in middle school or high school, one of them two options. And I'm looking at it, like, at the time, like, oh, that's just me, you know, in the picture. I ain't think about the intersectionality part at the time. after years later, when I became an advocate and learned about intersectionality, looking back at the picture, I'm like, dang, I was the only girl in the whole class. Because I know basically growing up, because, you know, I've been on white boys the majority of my life. It could make sense not why I am a tomboy for a reason, and then be walking with the boys and have some way that I'd be more comfortable talking to guys. Now we'll get girls and women could be operate different, how to deal with emotional connection. It's just different. And I'm just like, I'm not with that little drama stuff. Yes, I'm, you know, I'm not that girly girl, but I, you know, of course I'm a woman, cisgender woman. You know, I'm just, of course, like girl stuff, but, you know, I'm not like a typical girl or woman. Just, you know, and sometimes I kind of being forced to, you know, the standard where I like, be a woman. Like, it just, sometimes it don't fit me. Like, I know my mom be telling me, like, hey, let's show your girly side a little bit. And I'm like, I get it, but I'm like, nah, I don't feel like it. I just want to be me and just, how I saw myself in the world. Yes, I'm a woman. So that I just saw my feminine side sometimes if I want to be cute for once. But just looking back, you know, that photo, I didn't realize, you know, back to learn about autism and disparity within autism, I did not know it was that bad. I bet the younger generation may experience the same thing like I did. You know, bet you know, black and brown and autistic. I think I remember, they're not really much, I was in elementary school, but as I came, I guess, became a little older in elementary school, I thought I'd see more black and brown autistic people, and probably same thing in middle school. And then high school, I think so, but then I went all black high school and then graduated. So, it is, you know, I guess sometimes I feel like I'm maybe the only autistic person in my own spaces, or be the, you know, maybe like few black autistic people. Basically, in my black high school, I would probably like, I'm assuming I might be the only black autistic person. But yeah, middle school, not so much. There were like five of us who were, you know, black and autistic. So it varied a different experience, but during the time, I sometimes feel like I'm the only one in my classes, you know, might be autistic.
I think that experience can be very common for a lot of people, that they feel that they're isolated, they feel that they're the only ones. And that's not always the case. It's just that, you know, diagnosis doesn't come early to everybody. So that's, you know, this whole concept of making sure, for me, it was really important when I put my kids in school that they were in a mixture with multicultural. Don't want them to be the only one of their kind, so to speak, in the classroom. I'm really pleased to say this with my youngest one. In his class, there is not one single white child. Everybody is something. Like, everybody is non-white, essentially. So, you know, there's Arab, there's Latinas, there's Chinese, there's a whole mixture, whole mixture. There's black, everybody. But there's not a single white child in that class. So I thought there was one, but it turns out he was Arab. He's just light skin. But anyway. I think it's so important that kids have that and be interacting with different races, right? It's important to learn how to interact, not just with different gender, but different races. I think it's super important, especially as kids, that they have those experiences. Because one is less isolating and two is less scary. It's as simple as that. You're going to be able to talk to anybody when you're older because you're not worried about how to act or if you're going to, you know, make a mistake with somebody. Anyway. That's my whole little rant on why it's important. So now you're a student again. You're a student at UNC Greensboro. What are you studying? And what do you hope to do with your future degree? And I'm also going to ask you the secondary part to that. How is the racial makeup of your classes at UNC Greensboro?
Basically, I'm double majoring in accounting and finance. And back to the demographic of school, like, I think I remember, oh Lord, it's about a high percentage of black people, but in the classroom, not so much. Yeah, I forgot what percentage, probably like 20? I don't remember the percentage, but I know it's a very diverse campus. And also my school also have law percentage of LGBTQ plus community as well. But in a classroom, I might see a few Black people once in a while, but think me being disabled, I may be the only one. But then I realized one of my classmates, me and her find out, one day we just talking to each other, she also Black, found out we know the version. And put LGBTQ plus, I'm like, and I started seeing more of Black autistic queer on camp a little bit, so that'd be fine then, but it's hard to find like people have an exact identity like I am, being Black, queer, and disabled. It's hard to find. And also my roommate also know the version herself, so it's pretty cool, and also good friends. It's been not really much of like people have the same identity as me. It's very small, so it's good to see someone like me once in a while who have an exact identity, but it don't matter, be similar disability or different disability. At least you know what like be disabled, but majority of the time, I'm assuming majority of the population might be neurotypical. But I do be seeing a lot of like autistic people. I be seeing it in basically queer spaces. Basically, the hell I be finding them interesting. And yeah, I thought it was interesting. But yeah.
We're out there.
Kayla, you were mentioning like, it's been hard to find other Black, autistic, queer people in a lot of the spaces you've been at. I'm wondering, what about in terms of like social media? What's been your experience in finding community there?
I guess I remember one day I remember saying Black, autistic girl, something like that. And it kind of went from there. And then when I started seeing just like advocate like Alice Wong, Imani Bannon, all activists, different disability, and also though have a similar disability as me. And I thought it was very interesting. And then when I thought I learned about ADA and learned about disability history and rights, and I'm like, well, I didn't know all this stuff growing up. But it'd be good to know that. And also Lydia Brown, they, create spaces for Black and brown autistic people. So I'm grateful for them doing the work, and I'm in their spaces. So, and just also following people who are Black and autistic and like teenage and indigenous as well, like different experiences. And be following on different social media platforms, learn about experiences and like comment. And when I get the chance to, it's good to know that we do exist. So they're more important, more than ever.
And if our listeners want to follow you beyond this interview, if they're not familiar with you, how can they go about doing so?
Yeah, I got YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Patreon. And I just finally create a Clubhouse. And when you go on my social media, basically with YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, you see the link tree, and you go to all of my social media platforms. And also you could pay me on PayPal or Cash App. Maybe they'll be on the link tree. So that's how people could follow me.
Very cool.
Well, thanks so much, Kayla. I know me and Kelly have been following you on social media for a long time now, so it was really wonderful to get a chance to talk with you.
Without talking about it, it's very important.